kind of pick up something that I may not have given much attention to. So in Numbers, there's a passage that I want to talk about for a moment. It's Numbers 21, beginning in verse 33. And they turned and went up by the way of Bashan. And Og, the king of Bashan, went out against them, he and all his people, to battle at Edrei. And the Lord said unto Moses, Fear not, for I have delivered him into thy hand, and all his people, and his land. And thou shalt do unto him as thou didst unto Sihon, king of the Amorites, who dwelt at Heshbon. So they smote him and his sons and all his people until there was none left him remaining. So the first thing I want to do is on the map over here show you where he was. All right, so up here is Manasseh. Manasseh inherited the territory that was in the possession of Og. And he was up here in the area. This area is the area of Bashan. And some call it Bashan, but we can say Bashan, can't we? So it was up in that area, right up in that area. Now then, I'd like you to turn to Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy chapter 3. And what we're looking at here is Moses' description. He's looking back. You see, this is 40 years later. Moses is looking back on what happened there. And it really is not really 40 years later, because it was almost at the end of the 40-year wandering in the wilderness that they dealt with Og, king of Bashan. So this was at about the end of the 40 years wandering in the wilderness. So look in Deuteronomy 3. Then we turned and went up the way to Bashan, and Og, the king of Bashan, came out against us, he and all his people, unto battle at Edrei. Now that's what we read back over earlier. And the Lord said unto me, Fear not, fear him not, for I have delivered him and all his people and his land into your hand. And basically, it repeats what we read a little bit earlier in Numbers. But now skip on over to verse 12, Deuteronomy 3 and verse 12. And this land we took in possession at the time from Aroer, which is in the valley of the Arnon, half the hill country of Gilead, and the cities thereof I gave unto the Reubenites and to the Gadites. The rest of Gilead and all Bashan, the kingdom of Og. See that? You remember that I told you up there where Manasseh is? That was the territory that was held by Og. But there's a very interesting thing here. So, all the rest of Gilead and all Bashan, the kingdom of Og, I gave unto the half tribe of Manasseh, and all the region of Argob, even all Bashan, the same is called the land of the Rephaim. You see that, Rephaim? Now that word basically means shadowy one. And may have to do with legendary ones. So, the term Rephaim is used of giants, and you have a kind of a change, a transition. The same is called the land of the Rephaim, the shadowy ones. Jair, the son of Manasseh, took all the region of Argob under the border of the Geshurites. And there was a kingdom called Geshur, or Geshur, up there in the days of David. All right? Up there in the days of David. And Maacathites, and called them, even Bashan, after his own name, Havoth Jair, unto this day. And I gave Gilead unto Maker, and unto the Reubenites, and unto the Gadites I gave from Gilead, even unto the valley of the Arnon, the middle of the valley, and the border thereof, unto the river Jabbok, which is the border of the children of Ammon. And so, all right. So he gives, again, in chapter 3, he's talking about, he gives the land of Og, the land that Og possessed. And one of the things that, you remember the spies when they went up 40 years before? What were they afraid of? One of the things they were afraid of was what? Giants. And Og slept in a bedstead about 12 feet long, something like that. Now you can say, well, he slept in that because he just liked a big bed. It was a bedstead of iron. You know why it was iron? Because he's so big. And Moses tells this because, and he makes the point, you were afraid. You were afraid of giants. And here we took Og. So in the book of Deuteronomy, Moses is dealing with a new generation. And so he's telling them, sorry about that. All right. Kind of disturbs me. All right. Anyway, so they were afraid of the giants. And so here was Og, who slept in a bedstead about 13 and a half feet long. And he was a big guy, wasn't he? The bigger they are, the harder they fall. So they defeated him. And the cities, one of the points made about Og is in that region up there in Bashan, there were 60 cities. You know what kind of cities they were? Walled cities. And the children of Israel in their report came back saying, oh, the land is so strong, and there are giants in that land. Now they had occasion to go up to Og and to see his land, see the people that dwelt up there. So they knew about giants. But the cities, they talked about the walled cities. And they, oh, we can't take that. Oh, we can't take that. So Moses uses this opportunity 40 years later to remind them of these things. And we defeated them. Okay? So this new generation, though, this new generation, and why is there a new generation? Why is there a new generation here? The other one had died out. That's right. The other one had died out. And how did they know that other one had died out? They took a census. What did they find out in the census? That all those older ones had died out. Now the newer ones were on the scene. And this generation, I think, was probably one of the best generations of Israelites because they were courageous, they were led by Joshua, they were ready to take on whatever was before them. So I admire this generation of Israelites. They had never been in bondage. They had been free all of their lives. So it made a big difference. They were ready to take on the challenge and everything like that. So I think it's a real good thing to note. All right, now I don't want to keep on giving attention to those things. Let me see. All right. Oh, there's so much in Deuteronomy. But all right, look back up a little bit earlier. Yeah, I want to. Yeah, yeah. Look back up in verse 5. In fact, I need to go on a little earlier. Let's go back to verse 3. Deuteronomy 3 and verse 3. So the Lord our God delivered into our hand Og also, the king of Bashan, and all his people, and we smote him until none was left to him remaining, and we took all of his cities at that time. There was not a city which we took not from them. 60 cities, all the region of Argob, the kingdom of Og in Bashan, up there in that northwest, northeast corner, where Manasseh eventually inherited. In verse 5, Paul, would you like to read a little bit? Read verse 5. Isn't that something? All right, go ahead and read a little further.
And we utterly destroyed them, as we did Sihon, king of Heshbon, utterly destroying the men, women, and children of every city. But all the livestock and the spoil of the cities we took as booty for ourselves. And at the time we took the land from the hands of the two kings of the Amorites, who were on the side of Jordan, on the side of the Jordan, from the river.
Wow. So there's the information about Og and so on. All right. Now I want to go back to Numbers because I want to look back there and look at a few things. All right. So look back at Numbers 26. Numbers 26. Jeff Laney, can you read a little bit here? Beginning in chapter 26, and read the first four verses, please.
And it came to pass after the flood that the Lord spoke to Moses and Eleazar, the son of Aaron, and the priest, saying, take a census of all the congregation of the children of Israel from 20 years old and above, by the father's house, all who are able to go to the war in Israel. So Moses and Eleazar, the priest, spoke with them in the plains of Moab by the Jordan, across from Jericho, saying, take a census of the people from 20 years old and above, just as the Lord commanded Moses and the children of Israel, who came out of the land of Egypt.
Okay. Now then, Jeff, just look at verse 5, and whom does that mention? That's right. So these are the children of Reuben. So do you see, if you read through there, we will have the children of every tribe. So Reuben, 43,730, and all the way through. And a lot of places, you find so much information here, like in verse 11, when it talks about the sons of Korah and so on. Notwithstanding, the sons of Korah died not. And then it goes on with all of the other tribes giving the number. So they give the number. So that's what you have here in Numbers 26 is the new census. And it goes on into chapter 26, and the inheritance was given to the various tribes. All right? So, look over in chapter 27 and beginning in verse 12. Steve, can you read that? Steve, verse 12 through verse 14.
And you had seen it, you too shall be gathered to your people, and Aaron
All right, so what Moses then told God was, let the Lord, the God of the spirits of flesh, appoint a man over the congregation. Do you know what man they eventually chose? God eventually chose? Joshua. And what? Name me a qualification that Joshua had. He was faithful. Let's name some others. Huh? Courage. Name some others. Those are good. Those are good. Name some others. What about had he been associated with Moses? Do you remember when he was associated with Moses? When Moses went up into the mountain? You remember that? So Joshua was the right-hand man of Moses. You see? And what God says, in fact, in verse 15, go ahead and read a little bit further, if you will, beginning in verse 15 through 19. Yeah, so go ahead a little bit further. So you see, all this was done in the sight of Israel. What was the purpose of this being done in the sight of Israel? So that they, that's right, so they would know this was God's will, that the power was being transferred, and God did not leave anything to, he didn't leave anything to chance there. He wanted them to know. All right, now I want you to notice something else. We won't give much attention to this, but in 28, in chapter 28, we begin a series of really information about offerings that would be given at various times. So the continual burnt offering and on the Sabbath, two he lambs would be offered. And then in the beginning of months, the Passover, you would have two young bullocks, one ram, seven he lambs. And as it goes on talking about those things, look at chapter 29. In chapter 29, all right, chapter 29 begins, all right, let's see. Mike, can you read there in chapter 29? What is it? What does it say? The first of 29. All right, so what this is doing is introducing the month of the atonement, when the atonement was offered. And one of the things that is so interesting to me, look at verse, all right, verse 13. All right, Mike, go ahead and read verse 13, say 13 through 16.
Thank you.
Now then, go to verse 17 and read through 19. Now, if you want to do something very interesting, I'll let you do it, though. Is start in verse 13 and look at the... Do you see 13 bullocks? Now, on the second day, how many bullocks? 12. So it would decrease one bullock a day. One bullock a day. Now, on the third day, 11 bullocks. And so on, so on, so on. All the way through. All the way through. Count up how many that would be. Isn't that, it's amazing. I think the month of the atonement was the height of the sacrifices that were offered. The accumulation of those sacrifices, it was amazing. In fact, I did the addition here. Offerings for the seventh month, 73 bullocks. 17 rams, 119 he lambs, and 10 goats. Isn't that something? A lot of livestock, wasn't it? It was just pretty well a waste, wasn't it? Why was it not a waste? And because God was the one receiving the offer. And if anyone had the right to command that an animal be offered, it would be God. Why God? Because He made all things. So He was the one, but you're right, He was the one that commanded these things. Okay, I wanted you to look at that chapter because this chapter is the greatest summary of the offerings that were made and so on. I just wanted you to see that. All right, and another thing I wanted you to see. Go back for a moment to Numbers 22. All right, as we go back to Numbers 22, 23, and so on, what are we looking at here in Numbers 23? More about Balaam and what was offered. And you go on into chapter 24. And when Balaam saw that it pleased the Lord to bless Israel, he went not at other times to meet with enchantments, but set his face toward the wilderness. And so you have this chapter, the whole chapter, and I want to read something from the book here. So if you have your book, you can read with me. So I want to read the fourth vision of Balaam. So this is what I want to read to you before you listen. The fourth vision of Balaam was about the future, the days after Balaam, the latter days. Words like not soon, Numbers 24, verses 14 through 17. The one who would smite Moab and Edom and who would have dominion over the region could be a reference to David, who conquered all the nations around him, 2 Samuel 8, verse 2 and verses 13 through 14. More likely, it is a double reference, including the Messiah in its application. It is a vision of a succession of empires. One will rise to power only to be destroyed by another. So the local tribes will fall under the dominion of Israel, until the strong power of Asher. Can you guess what nation this is? Asher? Assyria. Until the strong power of Asher comes to destroy. But then Asher will in its turn fall to a power from the west before that power too comes to destruction. Isn't it interesting how in this prophecy We're being told about the succession of empires that are going to come. In Balaam's prophecy, the specific agents of destruction are somewhat vague. This omission seems strange until we remember that all through this fourth prophecy, there is a star of Jacob who will bear the scepter, who will have dominion. Then the most sensible interpretation. Yeah, Richard, your thing is whistling. That's okay. All right. Then the most sensible interpretation is that this whole fourth speech is a messianic prophecy which tells how the Messiah and his kingdom will triumph over the kingdom of men. I think that is the most sensible interpretation of this, and that would have to do with Psalm 2. So I wanted to go back and talk about that just a little bit. All right, so let's go a little bit further now. As we get toward the end, okay, look in, all right, 31, and remind ourselves what happens in 31, chapter 31. What does Moses order in chapter 31? Vengeance. The vengeance. And it's interesting to me. It's Moses' vengeance, right? No, it's not. And listen to how specific Moses says, talks about this. Chapter 31, verse 1. The Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Avenge the children of Israel of the Midianites. Afterward shalt thou be gathered unto thy people. And Moses spake unto the people, saying, Arm ye from among you for the war, that they may go against Midian to execute what? The vengeance of Jehovah. See, that's the idea. This is not Moses' vengeance. It's not the Israelites' vengeance. This is the vengeance of the Lord, His vengeance on Midian. So I wanted to make that point. All right, a little bit further. All right, so we're getting toward the end of the book of Numbers. In chapter 32, we have the children of Israel asking for various ones. Like, look in chapter 32 and verse 11. Let's read that one. All right. Andy, can you read that 32:11?
Surely none of the men who came up from Egypt from 20 years old and above shall see the land of which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, because they have not wholly followed me. Have not wholly followed me.
That's right. Go ahead, the next verse.
Except Caleb, the son of
Jephunneh. That's all right. Jephunneh, the son of the Kenizzite, and Joshua, the son of Nun, because they have wholly followed the Lord. So that's very interesting to me, and it's a kind of a summary. Let's go a little bit further. Get here to the end. All right. So we have some other laws and things like that. And then 36, we're about through. All right. So when you get to the last verse, I think this is a very interesting verse here. In Numbers, the last chapter of Numbers, verse 13. So, all right. I'm running out of readers. All right. Mike, how about reading 13?
Jordan.
Do you see how there is no question about where they are? They are across the Jordan from Jericho. So when they cross the Jordan, what's next? Jericho. That's what they're going to come to. So that's what they're that's what they're going to encounter. So what's the next book? Deuteronomy. Now, I mean, it would take, and I would love to do it, but I just don't think we can take the time that I would like to study the whole book of Deuteronomy. It would be a wonderful, wonderful thing to do. There's so much in Deuteronomy, and I hate to skip it, but I think that we probably need to do that. Deuteronomy. Sometimes Deuteronomy is called the second law, a repetition of the law. And one of the things we have to understand is that it was a repetition of the law, except, now you think about this. Was it just, in other words, why is there being this occasion? How many years has it been since the Ten Commandments were given the first time? 40 years. Now here we have a generation who has not been exposed to these commandments. So this is a repetition. But you see, it's far more than just a repetition. Oh, he said them twice. Oh, there's more than that. Why is Moses giving these commandments again? This is a new generation. They have not heard these commandments. Therefore, Moses is impressing this new generation with these commandments. And I'll just summarize this idea. Put yourself in Moses' position. He's led these people for how many years? 40 years. Do you get the idea that he loves these people? Oh, yes. He loves them like a father would love his children. So what is he concerned about these Israelites? What's going to happen when they go across the sea? The Jordan River. What's going to happen to them? Is he going to go with them? No. Whatever they do over there, it's going to be done without him. It's going to be done under the leadership of Joshua. And Joshua is a really good leader. But nevertheless, here we have this Moses. He is now 120 years old. And I just want to know, can you identify with a man who has led these children of Israel 120 years? And his heart is wrapped up in them. He cares more about them than his own life. So he says, now you remember. You remember when God appeared to us in the wilderness. When he revealed himself in the wilderness, did he show, Exodus 20, the Ten Commandments. Actually, chapter 20 is the Ten Commandments. But he goes on and emphasizes this. When God manifested himself, did he manifest himself as a cow or a bull? He did not have any likeness. And Moses says, God did that deliberately. Why did he not show himself after any likeness? What did he not want the children of Israel to do? To make a calf or any image of themselves or anything else? So he said, you remember that. And he repeats that, emphasizes that more than once. So you remember that when God appeared to you, he deliberately did not reveal himself as a form. because he did not want you making a form to worship. That was a big deal with the Lord. I don't really know why he had to emphasize that so much. I mean, had the Israelites been bad about doing that? Oh, yeah. See, they had been so bad, so that this is being emphasized. Moses is emphasizing it. Oh, boy. He had led those. But instead of, well, I'm just disgusted with all of you. No, he loved them. He loved them. And he wanted them to succeed. And he said, listen, you people, do you know what makes you special? There's one thing that makes you special. And that is the God that you have. There is no other God like that. In the world, there is no other God like that. You think you're special? No. In fact, he said, you're the worst people I ever saw, basically. So God did not choose you because you're so terrific. Why did God choose you? Because he loved you. He chose you. He loved the fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He chose you because he loved you. He loved your fathers. Your choice is based on the choice that God made, not any quality that you had. So he really emphasizes that a lot. And he says, the secret to your success will be the degree to which you obey the Lord. Obey his commandments. That will be your safety. That will be your secret. Obey the Lord in everything. So that's what he emphasized. And he gave them, so many commandments. The quotations of the Lord to the devil are found in the book of Deuteronomy. Okay? So it is a rich, rich book. But at the end of the book of Deuteronomy, we've been hinting at it all along. But now what's the time for? Moses. Yeah, Moses is to die. And one of the things I love to think about Moses is years later, 1,500 years later, in the time of Christ, Moses appears once again with Christ. He appears. I think that's good. So I think Moses was saved, don't you? I don't think there's any question about that. And so he appeared with Elijah. He and Elijah appeared with the Lord as the time approached the time of the crucifixion. And you know what they talked with him about? About his decease. They talked with Jesus about his decease. I think if I'd been Jesus, I would have found that comforting to talk with Moses and Elijah about that. Anyway, but it is time now for Moses to die. So, he does die, and I'm not going to give attention to this immediately. I think we'll close for now, but I want to give just a little bit of information about when he does die. All right, so we'll stop for today.